Accession number 18473, Reel 3.
Machida, Reel 3.
Yeah, we left Singapore, Hong Kong. We sailed up to Chennai in South Korea. Of course, the Korean War had just finished, hadn't it, when I joined the Navy?
Finished in
53. 53, 54. We just called in there briefly, that's all. We got entertained at the country club there in Chennai. The idle rich with the white sahibs and things, but nothing untoward. It was just a call in, courtesy call, I think. As a lot of these were, we went up to Borneo, around Malaya, Kuala Lumpur, Port Swettenham, Butterworth. They're not called that now, of course, they're called something else, but nobody sailed around there. Entertained by the local white populace, the Europeans. Borneo, they were still finding at that time skulls under the houses. When you dig out, build a new house and dig out the foundations or whatever, they were finding skulls there. Of course, they were headhunters, I believe, at that end. I'm not quite sure, but the old Dynax. But no, so that was mostly just courtesy calls around there. Show the flag around Malaya and Borneo. Korea. We did drop off for a while. Oh, it must have been Victoria, near the China coast. We anchored up there overnight. Biggest flies I've ever seen. The bodies of these flies must have been about an inch. Huge things, and you could hit them, and it didn't had no effect. You didn't kill them. They sort of shook their heads and flew off again. Japan. Japan was the next port of calling, or one of the more memorial ones. Yeah, we started off in Hakodate, in the island of Hokkaido, North Japan. I think we were the first British warship there for 7 years. They didn't like the Americans, hated the Americans, but they liked the British. It took us ages to get from where the ship was moored alongside into the town itself, into Hakodate. Obviously, we couldn't speak Japanese and they couldn't speak English, but they kept stopping and bowing to us and sort of smiling and made us feel welcome in a way. That was a great place, Hakodate. When we left there, a lot of townspeople came out, and you must have seen liners leaving port with all these streamers being thrown on it. Well, that was what they did to us. Warships never had streamers, didn't throw streamers to each other, it wasn't a done thing, but now the people of Hakodate came out and threw these streamers on board. So we held them and sort of hung on to Hakodate as long as we could before it broke. And the mayor of Hakodate gave us each of us a little brown bear. I was told that the youth, or the boys of Hakodate, carved these things. It was a national or a township emblem. Still got mine up there somewhere. Then down to Yokosuka. Yokosuka was an American naval base in Japan. We moored alongside one of their huge carriers. I'm nothing against the Americans, but really don't care for them a great deal, but then that's purely me. I think it's because of the contact, probably with the service, but I don't know. They got far more money than we did, and always seem to get the girls, but there you go. They treated us very well, actually, the Americans there. We were issued about, they used script dollars in their canteen and what have you, which is money printed by the Americans, and we were allowed 5 script dollars, which was nothing at all. It was it's less than 10 bob. And Americans got to hear of this, and they said, right, come into our club, into our bar, into our restaurant. You have anything you want, all you do is sign the bill. So this suits us very well, because the British Navy gave all-night leave. The Americans have to be back on board by midnight. So we spend up till about 11:30 in their bar, the Americans' bar, signing these bills and having a big feed and what have you. And then come midnight, we go ashore out of the town itself into Yokosuka, and the Americans have to be back on board. So we go to the bars, and the bar people there, because he didn't really care for the Americans, says, no, it's okay, Johnny, you drink free. We charge the Americans for it. So they pay for the grog and what have you in the base, and when we got ashore in the bars, they pay for it there also as well. They put the price up for the Americans. I rather like Japanese, they're nice people. And then down to Kobe. Yeah, Kobe is that was another strange place. That beautiful place, beautiful people. There's another strange happening there. I was ashore with a mate, going back on board. It was sort of not late evening, but it was getting on, I suppose, 11 o'clockish. Going back on board, we sort of seen the town, had a few beers and what have you, and this taxi pulled up. And there's two girls in there. I would be what? I joined the Carding Bay at 19, left when I was about 21, 22. Oh, yeah, I'll be around 19. Two girls in there, and they insisted we go with them. Only about 18, 19 year olds myself. I don't know why. Because being hormone on legs, I went with them. So we went to this hotel. Beautiful place. And we just walked in with the girls. They didn't cost us any money, didn't want any money, didn't want us to pay for anything. We parted company. I was taken into this bathhouse, which was beautiful. It was a square hole in the floor with hot water in, I suppose about 4 foot deep, with the most fantastic rockery, a little stream and plants in it coming down. And she undressed herself, and we got in this bath, she bathed me. Then took me up into the bedroom, which was just a huge bed. And we did whatever we did, you know. Hormones talking again. In the morning, there was a taxi there to take us back to the ship. And at 4:30 in the afternoon, there was a taxi at the ship to pick us up and take us back to the hotel. And I have no idea to this day why they should choose me or my mate, and why they should do it. Well, they like sailors, I don't know. It was strange. One or two of them did have women follow them down Japan, right from Hakodate right down to Kobe, and they just followed them down like a girlfriend. And once we got to Kobe and left there through the inland sea, then that was it. They sort of went back to where they started from, I suppose. But there's no money involved, nothing at all. Fantastic place. Wonderful steaks in Kobe. They specialised in beef steak. They mash out the cows, so there's no fat on them. And, they're beautiful, beautiful steaks. But we sailed then from Japan through the Inland Sea. Now I realise it was near Nagasaki, around that area. So we sort of sailed past Hiroshima and Nagasaki, around where the bomb was dropped. Of course, we never knew at the time. Need to know basis again, you see. Eventually became a radio ham, and I talked to people in that area a few years ago, and I sort of realised then that I sailed past their home, sailed past where the bomb had dropped. I wish we'd called in, because I would be sad to see Nagasaki and Hiroshima. But there you go.
Any other experiences in Cardigan Bay?
Cardigan Bay, let me think. The one came to mind a short while ago, and I've forgotten it.
Well, the more you think about it, the more you'll drive it out of your mind.
Oh, I will,
so
yeah.
It'll probably come to you as you stop
later
thinking
on,
about
yeah.
it. But another ship you were in was HMS Duchess. This was 61, 63.
That's right. That was my last seagoing ship.
What kind of a ship was this?
She was a Daring-class destroyer. Story has it that Lord Mountbatten, a nice fellow, Lord Mountbatten, he was a gentleman, Mountbatten was, he wanted cruisers, light cruisers. And the Admiralty said, no, you can't have cruisers, light cruisers, you'll have to have destroyers. And so he said, okay, we'll build the Daring-class destroyer, which is really a light cruiser, I suppose, but we'll call it a destroyer. So he got his destroyers in the end. But she was a good ship to be on. Nice captain, Captain Bailey. He was... It would have true seaman. He would never ask you to do anything he couldn't do himself. I've seen him sail a little dinghy in a terrible sea, single-handed. Then go and come alongside and say to his officers, right, now you do it. And we thought this was great, that he should do it first and then sort of say, okay, you can do it. But he was a fantastic seaman, fantastic. We did the Medden Home Fleet then. Went out to the Mediterranean first and back up to around the home area. But the Duchess, yeah, I was by then I'd been through Vernon again, and I was UC2, underwater control second class, so I knew more about the Asdics, more experienced. I could pick up whales better and differentiate. I looked after the Asdic gear down below the dome. The dome housed the transducer and the thing that actually sent the echo out, and I was in charge of that, right down in the bottom of the ship, in the bilges. And the control room itself, which really was only a radio set. Oh, that's all Asdic was a radio set. In fact, you could tune in to the BBC. The only difference was, of course, that the aerial you transmitted from was a transducer underwater. So it was, in actual fact, a radio set. Well, a good mate of mine, Jan Watts, I saw him recently. Met him after 36 years. Where did we sail around? Obviously went down to Malta again, yes, right. Visited the old haunting in Baraka Lift, Salima Creek, Grand Harbour, all around Malta. Terrific. That's where Jan met his wife, that's right, she's a Wren. I knew her in Pompey when I was going through Vernon, before we sailed out. I went out to Carding Bay, Duchess. And she went out to Malta at the same time. We met up again. Lovely girl. I was married then, of course. I was married in 1960. So I was keeping myself and my wife. But Jan, my best mate, married her eventually. I was his best man. We went round south of France. That was a nice place, that, south of France. Got nice girls there, but of course I was married, so I didn't do anything. You know, I was keeping myself pure. I thought a lot. But the Duchess.
You put something about an object all lit up passing under the
ship.
That's
right, yes. That was a strange. Being Asdics, being sonar, anti-submarine, then what I saw, I put down as a submarine, because I was that sort of. That was the way I thought then. It was night time, and I'm sure it must have been in the Mediterranean. The Asdic, other watch of the Asdic were closed up. I know that. Jan Moss was first operator, and he was an excellent fella. I was walking down the port side towards the bows, and underneath the ship, I saw these lights, and I could see them now. I could pick out each individual light. The shape of them, and this thing moved underneath the ship, close to the surface, but it moved as though the ship was standing still. If we were stood still and the submarine moved under us, that's how it moved at sea. We were moving forward, but it seemed as though we were standing still. It was strange movement, and it was that close to the surface that I suddenly realised, well, there's a conning tower on it, and it's going to hit us, and there's nothing I can do about it. So I hung on, and there was no collision at all, nothing. And this thing just sailed off into the night, and that was sorry. I went up to the Asdics ACR, Asdic control room, and I said to John, "Did you hear anything?" And he said, "No, I picked nothing up at all." Well, a submarine, the propellers, you can hear 50 miles away. And they make a hell of a noise. And had it passed underneath the ship, then certainly he would have heard it. But there was nothing at all. And what it was this day, I have no idea. But no submarine, as far as I know, has lights around it. It was illuminated right around the contour of a submarine. Most strange thing.
This was in the Mediterranean?
I'm sure it was in the Mediterranean, yes. Yeah. Yeah, most strange.
Was this also a happy ship?
The Duchess... A lot of the crew didn't like the captain. It was a happy ship, oh yes. Yeah, the men themselves, yeah. It was a happy ship. Every ship I went on was a happy ship. And I think that was because of the captains we had, even though Captain Bailey wasn't particularly liked. He used to do strange things and make us do strange things, but there you go, that's part of life.
What type of thing?
Well, you know, have things called evolutions. And it wasn't just with the seamen or the ratings involved, it would be everyone. I remember sending the P.O. Writer up to the top of the mast to fry an egg. And how he did this was up to him. But this was an evolution. This was an exercise. So it wasn't just the ratings that got it, it was everyone. The officers did these sort of things as well. Captain Bailey was a good man, good seaman. I think he's dead now. Yeah. Not long ago, a few years ago, I think he died. So what I can gather.
Did you ever think whilst you were in the Navy that you might be involved in active service in fighting?
That's what I went for. Actually, on the Cardigan Bay, we did. It wasn't actual active service. There was a time when the communist guerrillas were active in Malaya itself. And being at ASDIC rating, I wasn't allowed near the guns because of the hearing. But I was sent down to the magazine to load these shells into the hoist to feed the guns. And we bombarded the jungle. The army spotter in the jungle itself, directing fire. And we bombarded all day long. We bombarded the jungle. And I remember picking these shells up and thinking, this is going to be sent into the jungle, it may kill someone. And the strange feeling, I carried on doing it, and that's what I was there for. But it was the human side of me coming out. Yeah. It was a strange feeling. What I was holding in my hand could be hurtling through the air and exploding, probably killing someone. Whether they did not, I have no idea. But you could see actually seashells leave the barrel of the gun. Not well defined. If you stood behind the gun, you could see this sort of blurred shadow disappear from the muzzle of the gun out. It's strange.
How do you feel now about having served in the Royal Navy?
I think it was one of the best moves I've ever made. I really do. It made me appreciate other people. It's taught me to live with other people and tolerate other people. It taught me not to be a racist. I visited countries of all denominations, all nationalities, all colours, and I've never been treated any different. I've always been accepted for what I was, and I don't see why I should treat anyone any different. I think the only place we saw any nastiness towards us was in North Africa. I was on the comet, it must have been a comet. Went ashore in North Africa and there was sort of a bit of a gathering suddenly sprung up. Me and my mate went back on board. We weren't risking anything, but of course that time in North Africa was a very volatile time. So
which part was this, do you think?
Oh, it was Algeria, around that way. Bone, Algeria. But it was...
What was the crowd gathering for? Against the seamen?
Well, I don't know. It seemed as though they were coming to knock seven bells out of us, but we didn't hang around. But it suddenly just appeared. We were in the market, actually, buying stuff, and this sort of crowd, and they were sort of gathering and sort of looking towards us and moving down. So we shot through and went back on board. Whether it was after us, I don't know. But... Well, Duchess, we sailed actually from the Mediterranean and came back home, went round all round Sweden, Stockholm, Norway, into the Arctic Circle. Fantastic up there, beautiful, most beautiful place, Norway, with the fjords. We went in summertime, saw the midnight sun. One regret I've never seen the Aurora Borealis. I'd love to see that. But the midnight sun's marvellous. The sun seems to just dip below the horizon and then come back up again. It's marvellous. But Stockholm, that was a... You'd have had a trade fair there, I think. But I was ashore again with a mate, having a few beers. And we were approached by this gentleman. And we assumed, first of all, he was a bit limp-wristed. A bit of a wufter, but... bearing in mind we were in uniform and we had cross torpedoes and a harpoon on a sleeve, which meant we were ASDICs with a C underneath, of course, which was control. And he obviously knew what we were doing because he kept asking us and pestering us to go on board and look at the ASDIC sets. And we obviously thought something wasn't quite bloody right with him. Anyway, he invited us back to his place for more drinks because the bars were closing, and so we accepted and went back. And he was on and on, and all the time wanted to go on board the ship and look at the ASDIC set. So eventually it sort of sunk through that it was a spy. Well, my mate, not being sort of blessed with a great deal of articulatory, what shall we say, not very articulate, he thought that actions spoke louder than words, so he beat seven bells the shit out of him. We carried on into Stockholm, and this fella had the gall to go and complain against us, so we spent the night in the Stockholm police cells, in the jail there. Beautiful cells, double glazing, and marvellous food. And, of course, we got released. British consulate came in and released us and all that. We thought, oh God, we get back on board, I know Captain Bailey's going to have us. And we went before the captain, off caps, both of us. And all Captain Bailey said was, all I can say is I'm absolutely disgusted with you. Carry on. No punishment, nothing. And it wasn't until years later, when I was leaving the Navy, I went to HMS Forest Moor on the Yorkshire Moors, which is a radio station. And we had a lecture there about spies. And the person giving the lecture happened to mention an incident in Stockholm. And he said, don't do like two bloody idiots did in Stockholm when he caught a spy and beat seven bells shit out of him. And he looked directly at me. And afterwards I went up to him, I says, was it? And he says, yes. He knew how I was, and he knew all the history of it, and yes, he was a spy. Of course, Stockholm was close to Russia, and Russia was many, many years behind us in ASDICs. Very, very many years.
You mentioned homosexuality. Did you come across homosexuality in the Navy?
Not in the Navy as such. No, there's a lot of stories go around about sailors and homosexuality on ships and that, and I never came across it. I'm sure it's different. Homosexuals gather all over in the ports. I mean, that's expected. Whether you go with them or not, that's up to you. But never, never on a ship did I see any homosexuality or come across it.
Were these civilians who were accosting sailors in the ports?
In the ports themselves, yeah. Yeah, they were civilians, yeah. Yeah, well, every port has them. It's, I suppose all the shutter has them. All the garrison towns have them, you know. Have good luck to them. It doesn't bother me if that's what way they are, then that's fair enough.
Would any of the sailors take advantage of it?
I'm quite sure they would, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes, obviously, I think, I don't know what the statistics are about with homosexuality, one in five or whatever, but you've got 300 men on board a ship, so someone's got to be homo, aren't they, or that way inclined. So, but no, I never saw it actually on board a ship amongst the ratings.
Were there any particular ports that were notorious for it?
I wouldn't say notorious, no, we only came in the bars and in the pubs and what have you. They were there, and you could tell. Most of the people in the pubs anyway were matlocks in uniform. So anyone in civilians with either an old man or so, a bit doubtful. So, but no, it was never a matter of accosting. They never came to you in a cottage. If you wanted to see them, and okay. I suppose you went to them, but no, we never got accosted ourselves as such. It never came to us. It was, and they were there. But a lot of prostitutes as well. They were great girls. There was Scotch Aggie. What the hell was she? She must have been Plymouth. Scotch Aggie. She had a star tattoo on her forehead. But they were nice girls, they were great girls. They were, once they got to know you, You didn't have to go with them for sex or anything like that. You went into the same pubs as they were, and they got to know your face. And they got talking to you. If they had a poor week with no customers, then you bought them a beer. And then we got paid fortnightly, and our blank week, then they buy us a beer. So it was... There was a friendship built up, but I don't need no sex at all. I never bother with them anyway, but no, I knew some great girls.
What would happen to a sailor if he caught a disease from one of them?
Well, he got a sick bay. In the old days, it used to be the umbrella, I'm told, but... No, he got a sick bay. He'd have a stoppage of grog, and wouldn't go ashore. He'd stop it to leave until he was cured. It wasn't regarded as a self-inflicted injury because he carried on working. Sunburn was. If you got sunburn and couldn't work, then that was a big punishment. Self-inflicted injury, but no, not... If you got syphilis, gonorrhea, then that was treated. Rose Cottage was famous, I think, in Malta. That was supposed to be the venereal disease hospital. Rose Cottage. It actually was called Rose Cottage, I think so. But no, there was no punishment, just stopping your grog. Because we got the rum ration eventually when we became, I think 18 was the age, I'm not sure. But we had a tot of rum a day. Beautiful stuff. The petty officers got neat rum. Ratings got what they call grog. I forget who was named after. Vernon, I think. He made the rum ration for the ratings mixed with water. He had to have one of rum, two of water, because he wouldn't keep. The petty officers and that and chiefs could bottle theirs and we could keep, but not the ratings. And there's a shortage of glasses as well. There's only about two glasses and 30 men on one board of the ship. So you had to down the tot in one go. And this was, I suppose, half pint glass of rum. And once you got that down, you could eat anything. You'd have a ravenous appetite. No matter what they served up, you'd eat it. They'd have half an hour's sleep, and then you'd be ready for work again. I did get the splice to main brace once. And it was HMS Vernon. I think it must have been Lizzie's third child. She had Charlie and Anne, and I don't know who it was, the second child. We spliced the main brace for that. So I got a tot at dinner at 12 o'clock, tot time, and then one before I went ashore at night time. So thanks, Liz.